Hello, everybody, and welcome back. It is a Friday, so we get to bring on our favorite researcher. You know him, you love him. It's Young Anton.
Young Anton. But if you'd like to see even younger Anton, we've got a surprise for you.
We do have a surprise for you.
No, you don't. What is it?
Dun 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 dun. Jenny's gonna bring it up.
Oh my gosh. Where did you guys searched my Facebook for this?
We did. No. So my son is actually going to prom on Sunday. And so Jenny went back and pulled up all the prom pictures that we asked for years ago in 2022.
Yes. And we have this one of you and your beautiful mother. And remember, did you remember seeing this one? Do you know who that is?
That one is one of your sons, right?
No,
that's Julia.
Oh no way! That's right.
This is what I said, Anton. I go, everybody should find somebody that looks at him the way that Julia's prom date is looking at her.
I can't even see how he's looking at her. I mean, he looks like he's like hungry or something. I don't know.
All right, can I show you one more good one? You have to guess who it is.
That. Okay. Super producer, John?
Yes.
Wow.
Did you need to read the tag before you knew who it was?
Yeah, or? I did. Hey, I'm not. Dang, John, look at you.
I know, yeah.
Good looking man.
That's great.
That would be fun. That was years ago. Crazy, yeah. How time flies.
What about you guys?
Jenny's is in there. I couldn't find when we did this years ago. I and you know what's so funny? I probably have it now, Jenny, because I have all my mom's pictures from my mom's house.
Oh yeah, I
think have it now. But
tell me if I
find yours. Oh, how convenient!
Tell me if I look the same.
Identical.
Oh, identical. That's crazy.
I love Jenny. Yeah, I'm only saying this. I'm sure I was the same way. I love. Chef's kiss, the black nylons.
The black nylons.
That's crazy. That's 30 years ago.
Yeah, this was in 1994, and now we're 2024. So, yeah.
You look literally the same. I mean, in a good way. Like,
thank you, Anton.
I wouldn't have realized, you know what I'm saying? It's pretty good.
Yeah, so that was fun. So, I hope JD has a wonderful prom this weekend.
Yeah, he'll have fun. I'll bring some pictures out on Monday. Not too many, just a couple.
Awesome. Now, wait. One of your sons went to prom last year, too, right?
No, her son it's been 2 years, so he's a sophomore in college.
Oh, okay. So, yeah,
that was from 2022. That's when we had the prom pictures. He had, and he was ready to go to prom, and then he got COVID, so he couldn't go to prom.
Yeah,
so I've never been to a prom, Liz. You'll have to live vicariously through you. Can I come over and take pictures too?
Your son didn't go junior year?
No, our school is only seniors.
Oh, it is? Huh. Oh, I didn't know that actually. Okay, we're juniors and seniors.
No, we're just senior prom.
Really? Ours was everybody. Everybody.
The whole school?
Yeah, the whole school if you wanted to. No. There was the cultural norm was, of course, seniors and some juniors, but there was no restriction. Like, there were some freshmen that went to prom. Now, you had to be invited by, I think it was, you had to be invited by a junior
or a senior. Yes.
But you could go if you were a freshman.
Yeah. You go to a different school. You can go to prom if you're invited, if you're somebody's date.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Right. Like, the senior, for us, yeah. Only seniors can buy the tickets.
Wait, Jenny, hold on. Rewind. Now I have to let the viewers into something that we talked about the other day. So only seniors at your school are prom, right? And you went to the same school as your son. And you went to 3 proms. You went as a sophomore with a senior.
Yeah.
Jenny.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Now he's that senior. When I was a sophomore, I went with a senior. And that senior, now he's in LA making movies.
And then would you go with junior year? Because you must have been another senior.
Yeah.
You know, I will be honest. This is a compliment, by the way. You look like somebody who would absolutely, like, you know, date the professor or something like that in the best possible way, you know, in the best possible way. I mean that truly. I wouldn't say that as a.
I did go out with my accounting teacher at U of I.
So. Wait, which one? Because I know some of them.
No. The TA, not the professor.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, the professor we had, I mean, it was a woman. She was like the main one for like the Susan Curtis. Do you remember her?
Yeah, I didn't go out with Susan Curtis.
No, I know you didn't go out with Susan Curtis. I'm just saying that he may, anyway. All right, maybe it was one of her TAs. I don't know.
Anton, this segment has gone off the rails of the crazy.
All right, yeah, what are we talking about today, Anton?
All right, the whole show's been off the rails. I mean, this morning, Tom was talking about Red Lobster.
Were you watching last night? Did you see the market fall?
Oh, yeah, of course I did.
I'm the only one who missed it.
And you didn't text Jenny? She goes, why didn't you text me?
What? Yeah, I didn't text him. Well, I was actually texting Chris. Chris was watching Iranian television in order to be able to get some insight on the market, you know. Now, granted, he did tell me that the spoons were going to be unchanged by the open, and that I should buy some. He did, yeah. Now, and honestly, I was also expecting fully to be, but I was like, I don't have any more buying power. Otherwise, I would have absolutely, you know.
We just rewind. He's watching Iranian TV.
Yeah.
God, is he so much smarter than we ever are?
I know. I told him you should like hack into the Supreme Leader's like chambers. You'll get more. It's a joke, obviously. But he's like, it's his. And he told me, well, I would, but it's his birthday today. And I'm like, so I looked it up, and it's true. It was his birthday. So he like knows like all these random things about.
He is a smart guy. I do like listening to him. So Anton, let's go back to, you know, buy something when this is happening. So at night, if someone wants to trade something, there's not a lot of small, you don't have many small options. It's challenging for a small account. It's not like the options are trading. So you're just buying futures.
So last night, oil was moving along with equities. And the thing is, both oil and equities have a micro futures contract, which do have liquid options on them. So MCL as well as MES both have very liquid options. And, you know, if you're trading overnight, I mean, that's actually, you got some options there. I mean,
you can trade the options overnight?
Yeah. You can trade options overnight.
You can trade natural gas options overnight, too.
Well, they're all futures options. Yeah, of course.
But if you're trading the options, yeah, I guess so. It's
markets are usually wider. I would just like to say, no, I mean, MES is pretty, it's pretty liquid, but the overnight options are less liquid than they are during the daytime hours from my perception. Yeah.
But if it's moving, there's liquid. Like you had a ton of S&P liquidity last night.
Yeah. And last night there would be, right, because you're getting some motion, but
yeah. So, but no, I mean, okay, so let's get into the segment. We can talk about this a little bit because the segment does bleed into what's happening last night. So what is the way that you gauge market sentiment? And I put that in quotes because I'm going to define it for you, and I'm going to see what you guys think of it because a lot of people have different definitions. So if we go to the first slide. So compared to the market between November and March,
we just looked at November 2023 in the S&Ps.
Yeah. Right. Because we were saying how at the end of the year, when everyone had to put in their market predictions of where we'd be first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, end of year, I bet a lot of people put in 4,000. Now it's people would be shocked by 4,000.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that was the low, November 3rd or November 2nd, whatever was the low.
That's my birthday.
I'm sorry.
My birthday, November 2nd. The lows were in.
My sister's November 3rd.
Oh, I like her.
So basically those 5 months. So the month of April has been different, obviously very, very different, characterized by a lot of short-lived rallies, more two-sided action, binary events that result in downward price action as opposed to upside price action. That's a key one, right? Where bad news is bad news, good news is bad news, all that stuff. So my question is, if we go to the second slide. So that's just a fact. The first slide's a fact. That's what happened. Okay, now the question is, some traders call this sentiment and believes that this comes and goes in waves, i.e. it's not random, but it's cyclical. So you have like November to March, you're not going to get like some days where there's a huge sell-off and some days where it's like a huge rally, there's an actual kind of wave to it. So periods where a bull market and periods of a bear market. Now, the question for you is, do you think that this sentiment concept is tradable? Is there something called sentiment? How do you guys trade it? Is there a trade around it?
Well, I know we've seen over the years when you're in a bull market, like good news is good news, bad news is good news, and all news, everything's just going up. And then on the opposite end, when you're in a bear market, it seems the same. Like good news is bad, market things go down, bad news, things go down. It doesn't matter what the news is, everything's going down on news. And yeah. I heard Tom say, I don't know if it's today or yesterday, we're in a bear market. Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that.
Oh, and Tony's like, oh, you said it. Now we're in a bear market. Oh. And is it going to be that way where now it doesn't matter what the news is, we're just always going down, slowly grinding down?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key point here I'm trying to make is, I think somebody like Tom would say that no matter what you're in, you don't know it until it changes, which means right. after the fact, which means that there's nothing you can do about it. You kind of live in it without knowing you're in it. And the only way you can discern a bull in the bear market is after there's a change, because then you obviously see, okay, November to April was the bull market. Well, how do we know it's November to April? Well, because on April 2nd, we had the start of a down move, right? But that's only after the fact. So my question, some people think, okay, if there is a certain amount of price action that is different than what we had, I can trade that and adjust my positions to anticipate more of the same, right? So do you guys subscribe to that? Or are you kind of more like Tom's camp, where it's like, you have to live through it. The strategy doesn't change. The only thing that changes is implied volatility, and that's the only thing I can trade.
I do think Tom's strategy changes in a different environment. Wouldn't you say so?
I mean, my strategy changes. I went and adjusted, honestly, in almost all my positions. Anything I had stock in, I sold out the stock and switched to puts, because the puts are juicy because the vol is high.
Yeah, I think Tom's the same way too. When you've got such a low implied volatility, no one can really sell strangles in low implied volatility. The strategy right. always changes based yeah. on volatility. So I think that, and it's kind of, I think things are forever moving. It's kind of like the ocean. You know what I mean? Nothing is ever really standing still, because right. everything's kind of moving, and you just kind of adjust with what you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And we've got this higher implied volatility right now. And maybe it's higher today compared to what it was a few weeks ago, but maybe a few weeks from now, it'll be even higher. Who knows? But you do have more capital at use, more premium selling strategies. You get more aggressive when you have this boost in vol. As far as sentiment, Anton, every time I think, oh my gosh, we're going to keep falling, and I need to add some bearish positions, that's when we turn around and all those bearish positions lose. So I don't do that anymore. I'm not adding bearish positions now. I'm just taking advantage of the higher premium.
Right. I think that's a good point. And I think it took a long time to get there.
That's interesting.
Because you used to be able to be, I mean, honestly, when we first started doing this show, don't you think Jenny would be like, okay, this is day one, it's going to crash, you're trying to make it big on one move or another. And instead of that, you are just really trying to take advantage of the implied volatility when it presents itself. Like when it pops its heads up, you whack-a-mole.
Right. So at the end of the day, it is just implied volatility. Even though that tends to correlate with what's happening, you can't look at it based on the price direction, because that is unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, random.
And you'll see too, Anton, a lot of times, like we've been referencing the VIX a lot more because you're watching that. And I think I think you can change the term sentiment to, you know, the VIX, or because when it's very, very low is when it kind of gets a little dangerous. But the tasty traders are so good at, when the volatility is low, defining our risk, having the capital out. I mean, it's just kind of all part of this. It's all part of the narrative that we all do on a daily basis without actually really thinking that they're all moving parts together, right? When the implied volatility is low, it's cheaper to define your risk. The capital is on the sidelines. Not really thinking like, okay, check this box, then check this box. It just kind of happens because of the environment you're in. So the volatility does dictate the sentiment.
And I'm glad we're talking about this, because our account, Liz, so a month ago, we were putting on earning setup calendars or defined risk trades, mostly very, very few naked options. Now with this boost in vol and the move, we should start adding in more puts. We should, and we haven't. We've done what's your assumption, but we haven't gone through and just added puts in certain products. And I mean, that's what I've been doing, and I think we should do that. Otherwise, things can slow down, VIX can come in, and we missed out on a lot of opportunity.
Yeah. And I mean, it can go in the opposite direction too. We're not saying that that it's over. And there is a lot of geopolitical risk right now. I know Chris can speak more educatedly about that. So that does put some volatility in the market.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because whenever you have a move like you had last night, it does draw a lot more people, you know, into looking at the markets, even if you don't look at them on a daily basis. Like let's say the people who look at it on a daily basis, they don't change. They always look. Like Tom's always looking at the futures at 4 a.m., regardless of what they're doing, regardless if it's an 11 VIX or a 50 VIX.
Right.
But somebody that doesn't normally look at the markets as much, I think yesterday would be more inclined or has a higher propensity to pay attention. And I think with more people paying attention, it kind of changes the whole sentiment around the market because it kind of is a self-fulfilling loop, right? In my opinion. Now, it could change. We could just forget about this, dust it off, and move higher. But I think like when you get to this like crux, right, it's kind of like crossroads, I guess. Either we're going to continue to go higher or we're going to see a huge capitulation lower. I think sometimes you can make a case to trade off of this moment. Like, for example, sell puts because vol is higher. But from a directional, purely directional perspective, would a move like last night encourage you to do something directionally different? Or is it solely implied volatility regardless of what the market does?
I think it's solely implied. I think the right answer, everybody's got an emotional based answer to this as well. But I think the logical answer is it's implied volatility based. I think that's what it should be, right? It should all be based on implied volatility. Don't get me wrong. There is always some emotional attachment to some type of move that you think everybody's got an opinion on what direction things are. And everybody should have an opinion on what direction things are moving. But they right. get their opinions from somewhere else.
But I guess go ahead, Liz. Sorry.
I wanted to know, I know you were talking about Chris earlier and how you said during the move when you were texting him, he said it's going to be unchanged by the open.
Yeah.
Why did he say that?
So he said that because the U.S. Basically released a poser it's not just the U.S. Iran started to basically downplay Israel's retaliation as like, no, this isn't bad or anything, which means in Chris's perspective, which, you know, is probably true, all things considered, that Iran was trying to de-escalate. They didn't want to continue this. Because okay. If they did, they would have the narrative would be, oh my gosh, Israel did this, that, and the other, as opposed, like, you know, it's the narrative that really dictates somebody's sentiment, right? No matter what actually happened, right? Like, you can have the same event, two different narratives mean two different things, realistically right. speaking. Right, but because the narrative was the passive approach, there was, in Chris's perspective, well, we're de-escalating, and therefore the market, this is an overreaction, we would get back to even. Now, personally speaking, I would have agreed with that. And in fact, if I had, my bias was still bullish. I didn't get more long, but I was long. Like, you know, I was long going into it. So I guess you can say I was agreeing with it. But I think sometimes I get the sense that, and this is maybe the, you know, the ultra hyper market efficiency part of my brain that may not be, you know, sometimes fires off at the right moment, sometimes fires off the wrong moment. It's saying, well, you know what? Yes, that makes sense. But if it was truly a de-escalation, we would have seen the E-minis reverse in a matter of hours, not, you know, a matter of like, you know, half hour or so, because the U.S. released that statement that it's de-escalating and we were still down 50 points. Right. So my perspective, well, if that was true, shouldn't we just reverse it immediately? And maybe it's not the case. Maybe there is still some overreaction that's built into the market that you can take advantage of. You know, like Tony was saying earlier today, I found this really interesting. He said, Tom, do you remember, I'm sorry, Tom said this, and Tony agreed with him. Remember when we were on the floor, and an event like this would have taken 3 days to be digested by the market. And now it's just a matter of hours. And I'm like, hi, that's actually, I didn't know that. And that kind of makes a more of a case for being taking some of the news into context more than I guess normally you would.
Well, and Jenny, I'm going to need your help on this because I'm probably going to butcher what I'm going to say here. But do you remember when we were talking to TP the one time? Now, TP is from the trading floor as well. And he was talking the way that information is now disseminated immediately to everybody that we're never going to have. And I don't want to say never. And I, you know, that's what I'm saying. I'm sure I'm going to butcher this. We're not going to have those major crashes because the corrections are going to be a little bit easier. Something to that effect, right?
And it's weird because we haven't seen something like that in a long time. You know, Anton, when you mentioned VIX at 50, I thought, oh, whoa, VIX at 50. Geez, what's the high we've ever seen VIX? Haven't we seen it at 80?
85. Didn't we see it?
But I just can't even see that happening again. And I guess it could, but could you imagine VIX at 80? What would be going on in the market?
Well, we can all. I mean, 2020 was an example of that. The market on some day, people don't realize this, but in 2020, we had some days where the S&Ps were down 10%.
Yes, we did. 10%. I mean, I'd never traded through a pandemic before. I will give you that. That was my first pandemic. Like I had never.
But that's what a VIX of 80 begets.
What would need to happen in this market to get VIX back up to 80?
Huh?
What would have to happen to this market? We'd have, you know, spoos at 3,000 to get back to 80.
I mean, it's essentially in 2008, S&Ps were down 56% top to bottom, I think.
And it can't be an organized move down. If it's if it's an orderly move down, we're never going to see that. It's got to be boom, 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 boom.
Got to be violent. Right. I'll go back to it. Let's take a walk down.
So funny enough, in 2020, if you remember this was a very unique case of 2020.
Yeah.
But when this booze went, or I'm sorry, I just went to SPY because it's easier. This SPY went from 330 in short order. Like Jenny said, this was not order.
This was a month.
Yeah, from 338 to the low of 230. So, yeah.
That's 30. It was 37%.
Mm-hmm. In a month.
So here's it. Or maybe 33, whatever. Between 35%, that's a huge move. But, okay.
Thinking back, I can't even remember what happened to my account. Do you remember?
And then it never stopped. Then it never stopped. And sprungboard back. Like a phoenix from the ashes.
Well, and this is where I'll never forget. I had 305 calls. I had short 305 calls and it blew through my 305 calls, which is why I'll never sell a put again in SPY. I keep thinking it's going to get back to that. No, now I don't even sell naked puts in there now at this level, thinking, oh, we can just come right back to the 305 level. And then I should have been rolling my calls forever.
So do you know what's interesting? In 2020, it was very different than 2008 for a very specific reason. Even though VIX went to 80 both times, in 2008 the sell-off was way more orderly than in 2020.
Because it was a year. 2008 was a year. Like it was a year of sell-off. It wasn't a month.
Yeah, but it was also in like spurts, like in waves. 2020, I remember I did the study. 70% of the sell-off was from overnight action.
Okay, breaking news.
Remember that.
And breaking news from Frank the Great. I just have to tell you this right now because he has a direct line to me. The extrapolated VIX. So listen to this. For the crash of 87, the extrapolated VIX would have been in the hundreds.
Hundreds?
Hundreds, meaning, you know, adjusted for today's values would have been in the hundreds.
Yeah, I mean, I believe it. I mean, it makes, 22% in a day, you know, I mean, we've never seen that since, right? But at the same time, it's very like, I understand what TP is saying, but at the same time, I think, ironically, that actually adds, it doesn't change the risk. I think it shifts it. I think it doesn't make the crash less likely. I think it makes a orderly crash less likely. I think it makes a crash like 2020 a lot more likely, and a crash like 2008 a lot less likely. Because right now, what you're seeing is a lot of people go into the markets in these zero-day options. The thing is, with zero-day options, the risk doesn't necessarily go away. It just shifts. Right, because risk is still there, right? It's like risk doesn't never goes away; it just changes form. Notice this: what happens and I'll use 2008 as an example, just because you know it's maybe not the best example, but it's an example. You have a sell-off that takes place over many months. VIX goes up to 80. 2020, you have the same, less magnitude, but very very short sell-off happens in 20 days, 23 days. In zero DTE options, we were talking about this when we were in Houston. what's really the risk of trading a ton of these zero DTE options? If you trade, if you have a ton of people on the 5 delta, 10 delta levels, right? It's the risk of the capitulation intraday.
Yeah.
So I think the risk isn't so much eliminated, it just changes form to being, instead of a risk of an orderly crash of 2008, you have a higher risk of like an intraday sell-off of 4%.
But people have asked me, because of these zero DTEs, are we never going to see a big crash again because of the zero DTEs?
I don't think so. I think it's very likely. I mean, not very likely. I don't think it's any less likely. Or even if it, here, let me say, if it is less likely, the order of magnitude and the speed of it is a lot quicker. I think in the future, we'll see a lot more frequent, I'm sorry, a lot less frequent crashes. But when they do happen, they'll take place in like 10 days. And then we'll be back.
You heard it here first.
How many days are we?
I don't want to say that. I mean, I'm just saying it's just, that's just kind of what it seems that the risk is, because it's a lot of risk is being pumped into the short-term premium. That means the risk of the crash has to be on a shorter-term time frame. It has to align.
It does. It does, because it's, people are forced to reevaluate too. You know, when you're 45 DTE option, you think you don't have to adjust that if there is a crash. When you have these zero DTEs, it's over, Johnny. Whatever happens that day happens that day.
Exactly. And
yes.
Now
yes.
We're just about out of time. On Twitter, we did have someone write in about some of the firms that shut down last night. That shut down trading.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. And Tom, I heard Tom talk about this too.
Let's take a look.
If I could, I gotta move this. Hold on.
Oh, here, I can pop into Twitter.
I just had to move us to get the refresh in.
There were so Matthew, thanks for chiming in here.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
What are they doing today? What is that stock doing today?
Well, Hood is
Robinhood.
I didn't see it. What it's doing today is down.
Down a little bit.
Because I just saw it on your screen.
Down a little bit, but the fact that they halted.
Yeah.
Not halted.
They halted overnight trading. That's like. They don't have, like, that's just like stocks over.
That's not right.
You don't think so?
To stop overnight trading?
I don't think it's not right. I think it's their fault.
I mean, I'm proud that Tasty didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they don't have futures. They have overnight stock trading. Like, it's stock, like, the liquidity is so thin. I get it. I mean, I'm not a proponent for Robinhood specifically, but like, If you have liquidity conditions, like, this is the same reason we don't offer SPX options before the open.
Yeah, there is, they're illiquid. Yes, there is liquidity conditions. I get that.
I wasn't sure. I thought it might be down a lot more because of it.
Nope. Down 26 cents. All right. Well, Anton, great segment. Thank you very much for joining us today. Everybody have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend. Liz, post some prom pics.
I will. It's not till Sunday night, so we'll get them Monday morning. I'm going to be tired. I'm going to be up all night long. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. Remember to trade small, trade often.
Laugh with us, learn with us, and watch the Liz and Jenny show. Thank you, Anton. Everyone have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc., and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.